They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Which way is housing going?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. Housing starts have hit their highest level in a year and a half. But do we really want more new houses? That's just ahead. But first, the stock market's day is just beginning. Where is Wall Street? The Dow is down 25 points this morning at 11,119, with the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 off about 0.5%. Bank of America said it made almost $3 billion last quarter, but it's still losing money on consumer loans, and its stock is down 1.5%. General Electric earnings fell 30% from last year, and GE is down 2%. Stocks were a little low in Europe today, a lot low in Asia. And Chris Lowe is with us now, live. He's economist with FTN Financial. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So the government just told us housing starts and permits for new houses jumped in March. How exciting is that?
Well, that's right. A 1.6% gain to a level of 626,000. Keep in mind, though, back in 2006, they were building houses at a rate of 2 million a year. So it's still a low level of activity, but there's growth.
Here's my question, Chris. More building is good for construction and builders, but do a lot of new houses mean no comeback in prices?
Well, that's right. We still have a problem with way too many existing homes on the market. But what you're seeing is that the level of activity, as I said, is still fairly low, and it's in discrete places. It's places like Chattanooga, Tennessee, where VW just opened a new plant. They actually have more jobs than they did before the recession, and they need new housing.
Okay. Chris Lowe, FTN Financial, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
A spreading cloud of ash from Iceland's volcano continues to spread travel chaos across Europe. Meanwhile, all that talk last week about a United Airlines and U.S. Airways merger, well, now United is reportedly in talks with Continental. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Airline analysts say United's courtship of U.S. Airways may have been nothing more than a tease, something to attract Continental, which has a large presence in Latin America and Europe. Add that to United's Asia reach, and you'd have the biggest airline in the world. Seth Kaplan of Airline Weekly says that would mean cost savings and added revenue.
These two airlines together would just have a very strong network domestically and globally, and that's what business travelers in particular look for. They want an airline that can get them to a lot of places a lot of different times a day.
If there's someone crying this morning, it's probably the CEO of U.S. Airways. Kaplan says being a little player in a world full of giants would put the airline in a very difficult position.
When you're bigger, you just have more, frankly, protection if you need it from your government, from your suppliers, and just the wherewithal to withstand crises.
Kaplan says one city where a Continental-United merger would have a big impact is Cleveland. He says the Continental hub there would be unnecessary because of United's hub in Chicago. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, April 16th at Marketplace.org. The Federal Trade Commission meets today to ask, should consumer electronics carry energy labels? Shoppers for a computer or a TV often have to guess which gadgets guzzle electricity. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Caitlin Carroll reports.
Most consumers shopping for a new fridge might not notice the little yellow sticker on the side. That energy guide label breaks out the average cost of running that home appliance for a year. But TVs and computers don't sport those labels. That's because in the past, differences between models were slight. Jennifer Amon is with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. She says times have changed.
You have products on the market today that for the same size television, you could have the least efficient product using four times the energy consumption of the most efficient product.
Dmitry Malchinov is an analyst with the Yankee Group. He says these days energy efficiency is a top priority for consumers.
It's a difficult economy at this point, and I think consumers are realizing that energy efficient appliances will save them money in the long term.
Utilities could also offer rebates to consumers for buying more energy efficient models. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Stuyvesant Town is a housing complex in New York City. Its owners ran into some trouble when they started kicking tenants out of their rent-controlled apartments so they could jack up rents and turn a profit. It turns out one of the major investors was the biggest public pension fund in the country. Now the California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, is about to change how it invests in real estate, as Jill Barchet tells us.
CalPERS is expected to adopt a new policy Monday to stop investing in real estate deals that convert apartments with controlled rents to much higher market rates. CalPERS decided to make the change after the bad press it got when tenants lost their homes in New York and elsewhere. Even worse, the deals went bust, and CalPERS lost $700 million of taxpayer money. David Wood is the director of the Initiative for Responsible Investment at Harvard University. He says CalPERS carries a lot of weight with the banks that partner with them.
They can require the projects in which they're the equity investors to, you know, use these principles. And so the lenders are likely to follow on.
CalPERS' new policy could also be meant to preempt tougher regulation. The California legislature holds hearings Wednesday on a bill that would make it illegal for public pensions to engage in predatory investment practices. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
The stock market in Shanghai is trying to go world class, and today it took a significant step in that direction, introducing what are called stock index futures. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong has that.
Stock index futures are a brand new product category for investors in China. In the past, they could only bet on the market going up. Now they have the other choice. Arthur Krober manages the financial firm GavCal Dragonomics.
When everyone decides the stocks are going up, they go up really fast and without any real correlation to fundamentals because no one is able to, you know, make a bet on the other side.
Allowing in the other side, the pessimists who think the market will decline can reduce volatility.
That ought to cut the top off of some of these speculative bubbles that you've sometimes seen in the Chinese stock market.
By the way, this is what Krober calls a plain vanilla derivative, not one of those exotic products at the center of the financial crisis. Shanghai's hope is more financial products will lure more bankers and more financial firms and upgrade the ecosystem. The city wants to become what it considers an international financial center by 2020. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner meets with Republicans today. He's looking for support for a financial overhaul bill. But can government really prevent another bust or another Wall Street bailout? My guest is Roger Lowenstein, whose new book is The End of Wall Street. Good morning.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
By End of Wall Street, you're talking about the end of an era when we trusted Wall Street to regulate itself.
That's right.
But now, Roger, banks have repaid their bailout money. The economy seems to be recovering. Stocks are back up. Are you still sure that Wall Street's heyday is over?
Well, some of the banks have repaid their money, not all of them. The real estate markets, which after all, where this problem really started, are still having a lot of trouble. It's not clear at all that we're out of those woods yet. And it certainly looks like the government is going to be more in the middle of the financial industry than it was before.
What do you think of the financial reform proposals in Congress now?
I think there's some good ideas. I think they try to do a few too many things. For instance, they try to create a new systemic risk regulator that's going to warn us in the future, advise the Fed. I'm not sure why we need two bodies, this body and the Fed. Adding another body, I think, might tend to create just another layer.
That brings up something I've wondered about. I keep hearing that, we've learned we can't trust the Fed, or we can't trust the SEC or these regulators or these ratings agencies. But given the fiasco we've just been through, is it not possible that the Fed and these regulators could have a new mandate and new powers now? Could they be more effective?
Bankers make mistakes. Regulators make mistakes. What I would want to see, the new mandate in the legislation, is some speed limits so that when they make mistakes, they're not as harmful, the same way we have speed limits on highways. And I think the big speed limit we want is a limit on leverage, a limit on how much every financial firm can borrow.
But you wouldn't go as far as breaking up the big banks?
You know, I'm not afraid of big banks. I'm afraid of unsound banks. I'm afraid of overly leveraged banks. The risk, this little financial product subsidiary of AIG, you know, nobody was paying attention to that beforehand. It's leverage that'll kill you.
Roger Lowenstein is the author of The End of Wall Street. Thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure to be on the show.
And Roger spent an hour chatting with the host of Marketplace Money, Tess Vigeland. You can hear that interview at marketplace.org. And finally, here's all the week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. Traveling to or from Europe is rough. An Icelandic volcano is spewing out stuff that makes flying an airplane mechanically tough. Iceland, haven't you done quite enough? Another hit to the solar plexus for Toyota, owner of Lexus. Take a turn sharply in their SUV, and your wheels could end up where your roof ought to be. Retail sales up, but inflation is not. Modifications to loans have done squat to keep housing foreclosures from going berserk. The Wi-Fi on iPads appears not to work. Corporate earnings turned out swell for both Intel and Taco Bell, and J.P. Morgan Chase as well. Not Alcoa, their stock fell. But UPS had great success, and Conan said yes to TBS, because Fox impressed him less, I guess. While you're waiting for Coco's return to TV, watch The Minute at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ, and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.